Okay, we are on the air. All right, so a few shots are sent in. One of them was about making brachas on medicine. Do you make brachas on medicine? So if the medicine tastes disgusting, or the medicine is just like, you know, palatable, okay, no bracha is made. Because the reason why you're taking it is for medicinal purposes, not for the benefit, and you're not benefiting. Only if the medicine actually has a good flavor and tastes good and you enjoy it, then you would make a bracha on it. When it comes to food, if you eat food that you don't enjoy, you still make a bracha on it, as long as it's not vile. But when it comes to medicines, it's not just that you have to, you palate it, you can handle it. It actually has to be good tasting. Otherwise, you would not make a bracha on it. Another shy that sent in was someone who came late to shul on Shabbos, and the tzivur is up to musaf, and you still haven't done shachris yet. So we spoke in the past, you never skip anything between Baruch Hu and Shmon Esrei. But now, what should you do? Hello, Alex and Rebecca. What should you do as far as coming late to shul? Should you daven musaf before shachris or shachris before musaf? Meaning, should you daven with the tzibur their musaf and then you do shachris after or not? So there is a big debate about it. It seems that we paskin, it's do not switch the order. And then for daven shachris and then musaf. And ideally, if you could time that your shachris shmon esrei will be with the tzibur's musaf shmon esrei, there would be a mila, would be an advantage to do that. And then theoretically, you could dive into your musaf with a chazan's musaf. And then if you could work that all out, it's fine. But you do not skip parts of shachris from Baruch Hu on, and you do not switch the order. Okay, another shaila sent in. This is very controversial, but let's say you were Makabel Shabbos. Either a lady lit the candles, or a man said, I am Makabel Shabbos, or a man by himself davened Kabbalah Shabbos. Then he realized he didn't daven mincha, or she did not daven mincha. Are you allowed to daven mincha after you're in Kabbalah Shabbos? So if the Kabbalah Shabbos came because you daven Maariv early, or the whole Tzibur daven Kabbalah Shabbos and you daven with them, so then it's Shabbos, you cannot daven mincha. If it came about just through your individual Kabbalah, you lit the candles, or you said good Shabbos, or you said Kabbalah Shabbos, so then you could and should daven mincha. You took on the Kedusha from Shabbos, so you can't do malacha, but still it's not fully Shabbos yet, and therefore you can, it's not nighttime yet, and therefore you can daven mincha. Okay, those are some shailas. What?
A woman, if you say, I mekabel like kedushat Shabbat, is that considered taking it on, you can't daven mincha, or no?
Well, if you say, I'm mekabel kedushat Shabbos, you cannot do malacha, you cannot drive a car, you cannot turn lights on, but you can, according to what I'm saying now, you can and should daven mincha.
Shocking. What about a woman that lights candles?
She can and she should daven mincha. Better to do before. So I'm not saying ideally do like this, better daven before. But if the time is running out, and it's getting close to Shkia, better to light the candles now and then daven mincha after.
Shocked. And what about, so when can you stop saying mincha then?
9 minutes after Shkia, loosely.
So you're saying no matter what you say, you can still daven?
Yes, except if you were part of a shul in Minyan. Minyan and shul, then let's say they were Makabel Shabbos early and you daven with them, Kabbalah Shabbos or Maariv, once the shul has done it, then you shouldn't daven mincha anymore.
Shocker.
Okay. Now, we'll move on to our topic of the night, which in the Israeli shir, I ran out of time, so most likely I'm going to split it into two. What I'm trying to cover here is wine touched by a guy, bread cooked by a guy, food cooked by a guy, and milk milked by a guy. All different food products that a guy came in contact with at some point. So I just want to first go through the terms, the terminology you'll be using. That way, when you see it in the street or read it on a package, you'll know what you're seeing, what's going on. Okay, so we have Cholav Yisrael and Cholav Stam. We have Yayin Nesach and Yayin Stam. We have Bishul Akum and Bishul Yisrael. We have Pas Akum and Pas Yisrael. And one more thing, we have pas palter. Okay, so those, if you counted them up, 9 different terms that we want to understand what they mean, how are they relevant. Some of them are very relevant, some of them are not so relevant. So go one by one, see how far we can get. So we'll start with Chol of Yisrael and Chol of Stam. So Chol of Yisrael means a Jew was there from the milking, overseeing it or doing it from the milking and on of the cow. That's Chol of Yisrael. Chol of Stam means the Jew was not there from the initial milking process. Now, it used to be, if the Jew was not there, a Jew could not eat the milk, not drink the milk, eat the cheese, etc. There, the reason is, we're nervous that a guy may have mixed in pig milk or camel milk and things like that in the milking process. And therefore, it was a real shash of eating treif milk. Nowadays, because of government oversight and packaging, and the chashash is less. There's a lot less. And therefore, Me'ikir Adin, for example, OU, will give products a hechsher, and many people, fine, upstanding citizens of Klal Yisrael, will eat milk, that drink milk that is Chol of Stam, that's not Chol of Yisrael. And that's become the minhag of many places. I personally was told by my Rebbe not to drink it, so I don't. But OU and many other very fine hechsherim will give hechsher to what's called Chol of Stam. And therefore, it's fine to drink milk, cheeses, etc. That is that. But Chol of Yisrael, just understand, what is Chol of Yisrael? It's a special oversight to make sure nothing was mixed in. Now, there's a hot travel spot today called Abu Dhabi and Dubai. And I was told that over there, they have camel milk. And that's very popular. And therefore, if you do travel to a place like that, make sure you get the Star UAE milk that has on there the guarantee that it's not camel milk. But as far as it being in America or Israel, Hershey's and things like that are Chol of Stam, not Chol Yisrael, and the Ikir Din is fine, but Ichumra, perhaps not to drink it or eat the cheeses, et cetera.
Rabbi Goldberg, when you're traveling around the world, are there certain regulations that if you know a country has, then it's okay to drink their milk?
As long as, if there's any doubt and you're not sure, then you cannot. Then you have to get Chol Yisrael. If, however, the countries and most Western civilizations have them, that they're guaranteeing that this is cow milk, so then the letter of the law would allow it. Again, I don't know which countries you're going to be traveling to, but if you're going to non-civilized places, be careful. And if you're going to regulated places, then you definitely would have to be careful. But other societies, regular societies, will say there should be no issue. Maker, there's still
room. You were to watch, if I travel to a third world country and watch them milk the cow, I can drink that milk.
Yes, no problem. Because here the issue is, as opposed to what we're about to discuss, here the issue isn't a separation between Jew and guy. Here it's just a real issue in kashrus. Is it kosher? Is it not kosher? Fine. That's topic one. Now, move on to a little bit harder one, is the wine sugya. Okay, so if a guy worships Avodah Zarah, and part of the process is pouring wine, doing libations for the Avodah Zarah, that is a real problem. That wine is asr midaraisa, both in drinking it and in benefiting from it. It's called asr bahadna and asr bahachila. That's called yayin nesach. Now, today, the garden that we come in contact with, for the most part, do not worship Avodah Zarah. Christianity, Muslims, etc., is not Avodah Zarah. Most of Avodah Zarah is happening today in Thailand or Indonesia, perhaps, or India, Turkey. I don't know exactly, but not most garden that we come in contact with. And therefore, most of the garden and wine that we're going to deal with is not really Yayin Nesach, but it's something else. It's called Stam Yayin, which means just regular old wine. And there the issue is a gezeira. It's an isadir abanan, not to drink the wine that a goy came in contact with. We'll see exactly what kind of contact. But so a wine that a goy came in contact with is a gezeira because of yayin nesach. So again, so nowadays what we're mostly discussing is wine that is not asadir isa, but is asadir abanan to drink. That's called stam yayin. So now this is very relevant. Let's understand certain parameters of this. First of all, if it is cooked wine or grape juice, so then there's no problem. I believe that was because the guy never would use that in their service. So grape juice or cooked wines or yayin mavushal, there's no problem with. A guy can touch it, drink it, and then you could touch it and drink it, and no problem. The problem is only with uncooked wine, otherwise known as yayin she'ein mavushal. So all wine bottles that have a heksher on there will tell you if it's mavushal or not mavushal. Okay, so if it's mavushal, there's no problem. If it's not mavushal, yes, a problem. Now, the big issue here is the idea is to not mess up with yayin nesach, with avodah zara wine. Is brought down, however, a Jew that's mechalal Shabbos publicly has the halachic status of a goy in many areas, and this is one of them. And therefore, a Jew that's mechalal Shabbos publicly who touches your wine, you may have a problem. So I'll tell you a story that just happened. I got a phone call from someone whose relative is dating a non-Jew. Relative dating a non-from person, and the non-from person poured the wine for the family. So the family said, I'm going to tell you in a second, Eddie. The family said that we can't drink the wine because Nick, we'll call him Nick, poured the wine for us. Now, Nick used to be Menachem Nachem and was a yeshivish guy, and he knew the parameters, and he said, no one here has ever seen me be Mechal Shabbos. As far as you guys know, I keep Shabbos. You have never seen me be Mechal Shabbos. And therefore, since it's not public desecration, you can drink my wine. I think that guy's going to come back one day. But right now, he's still Nick, not Menachem Nachem. So the halacha is, though, he's half right and half wrong. I'll explain why. Because even though no one at the table saw him be Mechal Shabbos, and that's true, but they know he is because he comes for Shabbos meal, and he goes home 10 miles away. There's no chance that he's walking. So he's publicly transgressing Shabbos because he's driving a car home, which is public on Shabbos, even if you and me didn't see him. That is public desecration. If we know, even without our own eyesight, but we know that he's publicly desecrating, so that is public desecration, and therefore, based on that, you would not be able to drink his wine. However, there's one other heter out there, which is huge, debatable, but if need be, you could rely on it, which is, if he is desecrating Shabbos, but he still believes in Hashem, so then he's not like a guy. Right? There are some people that out there that hate God, don't believe in him, and that's why they desecrate. Those people, you cannot drink their wine. But someone like my friend Nick, one day I think he's going to come back. He's not rebelling against it. He doesn't say, oh, there's no Hashem in the world. He knows there's Hashem. It's just it's too hard. He's not interested right now. He's been burnt, whatever it is. But when push comes to shove, he's going to say Shema Yisrael, and he recognizes Hashem, and therefore he's not in the category of someone who is like a guy. And therefore, they could drink Nick's wine, but for a different reason than Nick. And very good, Josh, there are some Jews who know nothing about Shabbos. It's called a Tinek Shenishba. They perhaps don't even know. They don't know they have to keep it. So therefore, there is a leniency with them that if they either know zero, or they definitely know there is Hashem, they believe in him, they just don't know what that means. So that would be another heter to drink their wine. Now, again, it's not ideal. I'm not saying please have them pour you, but if it happens, there is a leniency to rely on that. Now, as far as what kind of touching, everyone agrees if they stick their finger and touch the actual liquid, that would be a problem. Now, we're going back to Goyim. We're away from Mechal Shabbos now, we're back to Goyim. So if a guy sticks their finger into your cup, into your bottle, and touches the wine, that is a problem, according to everybody. If they just touch the bottle, or they just pick up the bottle, and they didn't shake the bottle, there's no problem. However, if the bottle is sealed and closed, no problem at all. But now we're talking about an open bottle of wine. So the guy just picks it up or just touches it, no problem. If he shakes it or he pours it, then there is an issue. Then most people will hold that's a problem. If there is one sheet that holds only if he actually touches it, the actual liquid. But by just pouring the wine, that since he didn't touch it, there is a leniency, but that's a leniency you definitely don't want to rely on if you don't have to. So again, if he just moves it, but doesn't shake it, Cohen family, Siegel family, there's no problem with that. If he just touches the bottle or picks out the bottle, if he shakes it or pours it, definitely worthwhile to be machmir and not drink the wine. If he didn't touch it, all he did was pour it, and you really, either it's very super duper expensive or super duper going to insult someone, there's room to be lenient with that, but try not to come to that situation. Now, if let's say they open the fridge, by opening the fridge and the wine is on the door, so that could be a problem because when he opens the fridge, it shakes it. But there, since it's so indirect, it will be okay. So it's only become the contact with the bottle itself, pours the bottle and shakes the bottle, would there be an issue? Now, one other thing in this field is, yeah, Zevi, even if you're watching him, because here the issue isn't, you know for sure he didn't do Avodah Zarah. All our goyim today, we come in contact with, aren't doing Avodah Zarah. It's one huge gezerah. And these are the parameters of that gezerah. So even though you saw him touch it, it doesn't matter. If you saw him touch it, it's a problem. Now, one other thing is where it's very possible is what happens if you have a non-Jewish cleaning lady or cleaning man, and they're in your house. You're not watching them the whole time. So anytime that you go out of the room, they may be running over to your wine bottles and shaking them and touching them. You don't know what they're doing. So the way it comes out like this, if you did not see it and they know you're home, or they know you could come home at any second, you don't need to be nervous. If, however, you say, bye, I'm going out for 3 hours, and they know you're not coming back for 3 hours, just like we learned the last 2 weeks about yichud, there's something called yichud of the goyim with your wine. And therefore, that would be a problem as well. If they feel confident that you're not home and they're secure and they could touch whatever they want to touch, there is a major problem with your wine, and perhaps even with dishes, which will be another shmooze for another time. But therefore, if you do have non-Jewish cleaning help, never give them the feeling of security that they're not going to be watched, they're not going to be looked. They should always feel that they can be looked at any time. Okay, that is a quick look at Stam Yayin. Now, moving on to Pas Akum. Okay, Pas Akum, so again, there's three categories. Okay, if you have a camera and they know, that means they're not secure, that's fine. As they cannot be secure, if they are secure, so then it's a problem. Now, moving on, Pas Akum. So there's three terms here. There's Pas Akum, Pas Palter, and Pas Yisrael. I'll explain how this works. There's an Issa D'Rabbanan of going to Christian's house and having him bake challah for you and eating his homemade challah. That's an Issa D'Rabbanan because we do not want you getting too close with Christian, Peter, or Paul. We don't want you becoming his friend because you may eventually marry his daughter, his sister, or the neighbor's sister. And therefore, to separate the Jews from the Goyim, the Rabbanan instituted an Isser of eating their bread. Now, if you put it in the oven, that's fine. But if they put it in the oven, it's their bread, they baked it. Even if you own it, they bake the bread. You cannot eat that bread. That's Pas Akum. Issa D'Rabbanan, do not eat that bread. Now, because bread is so important, the Rabbanan added a kula here, which is, let's say the guy did not bake the bread for himself or for you. He baked it to sell. So then there's less of a personal relationship because it's not you and me, Jew, guy, sitting down to break bread. It's I'm a businessman. I have a bakery. I have a factory. I'm selling bread. So let's just say Arnold's bread. I don't know if it's Jewish owned or not, but let's just say Arnold's a guy. So Arnold's bread, his bakery or his bread, he's selling for everyone. So then the Rabbanan said, if Jewish bread is not available, you can buy that bread. That bread is called Pas Palter. That's the baker's bread. So again, it has to be kosher. You have to know that it is kosher. It has to have a hechsher. You have to know the ingredients are good. It was baked in a kosher oven, etc. But as long as it's kosher bread, as far as the Issa D'Rabbanan of Goyish bread, here's the leniency. If you cannot get Jewish bread, then you can buy that Goyish bread called Pas Palter. Now, back in the day, that was very relevant because there weren't so many Jewish communities or Jewish bakers, and therefore you had to rely on this heter. Today, we have in every Jewish community, there's a Jewish baker, bakery, multiple Jewish ones. So perhaps that would not apply. We are now discussing pas palter. So the heter of pas palter, of the baker's bread, may not exist today because we have many Jewish bakers. However, it's brought down, if there is a significant improvement or difference, advantage to the goyish bread, then you can still buy it. For example, if you have better taste, the goyish baker's bread tastes better, looks better, softer, more conveniently purchased, you have some advantage over the goyish bread, so then you can buy the goyish baker's bread, the pas palter. If, however, they're both equal, then you need to buy pas Yisrael. Pas Yisrael is the Jew baked the bread. The Jew put it in the oven. To sum up, me'ikra din pas achim is aser. Me'ikra din pas palter is aser. But if there is an advantage of pas palter over pas Yisrael, so then you can rely on that and buy that. Now, the minhag of the world is, you'll see super duper from people will only buy pas Yisrael. I was by a wedding once and they asked me, is that pas Yisrael? I said, I have no idea. I'm not from the super duper from like that. So I don't know, because we rely mostly on this heter that the pas palter tastes better, more accessible, softer, nicer. However, during a seres me'tshuva is brought down to be machbid and not to have even pas palter, only to have pas Yisrael. Now, it extends to not just bread, extends to other mezonos, things like cookies, cakes, Cheerios, pretzels, things like that, ragalach. Those things are also under the umbrella of pas achon, pas palter, pas Yisrael. And therefore, you should avoid them for sure, says Neitshuva. And some people are makbid the whole year round. And that's when you see the packaging, if you're at the store and both breads look good, and one says pas Yisrael, one doesn't, at that point, you have no reason to buy the pas palter. You have no reason to buy the goyish bread, buy the Jewish bread, besides helping the Jewish industry. But also, you may lose your heter of buying goyish bread because the Jewish bread is accessible, tastes good, looks good, and therefore worthwhile when you're buying it to keep your eye out for that. Now, so that's a wrap on Yayin Nesach, Chol Yisrael, Yayin Stam, and Pas Akam, Pas Yisrael. I'm not going to have time now to do Bishul Akum. That will do it in an upcoming Shir Mitzvah Shem. Bishul Akum, just to know what we didn't discuss, Bishul Akum is everything else that a guy cooked. I mean, bread is his own parsha. Bread is his own halachas. Bishul Akum is anything else besides bread. And we're going to see any time that a guy is involved in the cooking process to certain degrees may be an issue. And that we're going to have to save for next time. Next week, if we have time, we'll try and do Bishul Akum. I also wanted to do Tu B'Shvat halachas. Next week is Tu B'Shvat. And I wanted to do the brachas, the order of brachas, right? It's a big shot of which bracha comes first, which species, Ha'etz, Ha'dama, Eretz Yisrael, if it's Shalim. So I want to focus on that first, and then hopefully this time to also do Bishul Akum next week. We'll end off now with Bitachon. We have Chavis HaLavavis. We're in the middle of Shar Gimel. So in the middle there, he says, in order to have true bitachon, you first have to make sure that you're doing the ratz of Hashem. You first have to make sure that you're doing all of his mitzvahs. He quotes the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, which is, asei ritzayncha, ritzaynoi kiritzayncha. You should make your will like his will like your will. Kedesh yaseh ritzayncha kiritzayno. You have to make what you want to do, what Hashem wants you to do, in order for Hashem to do what you want him to do. Means what when we call bitachon, right? We're relying on Hashem. Hashem will do good for us. Hashem will take care of us. But he says it's foolish to think he's gonna give you reward and give you good things if you're not doing what he wants you to do. And therefore, one requirement for true bitachon, Chavis Alva says, is that you are actually doing his will. Okay, that is a thought in Bitachon. We'll continue next week. Thought in davening and tefillah. We discussed last week the kavana joining chonin das, that you should be thankful that you're not an animal and that we have one edge, at least one, over animals that we have das, and therefore we should be thankful and davening for that. That's what gives us the ability to daven. The next bracha in Shemona Esrei is Hashivenu. Hashivenu is that we're returning, we're doing tshuva. So the Mishnah Berurah explains in Kuf Tezva, the Mishnah Berurah explains the connection, because now that we have das, we're smart enough to know that we've done averus. If someone is lacking das, so then he doesn't even know that he's done anything wrong. So that's the flow. Thank you, Hashem, you're giving me das. Please continue to give me more. Oh my gosh, I have das. I'm so terrible. I made so many mistakes. And therefore, we have to follow up with Hashivenu. It's time to do tshuva. Recognize your mistakes and therefore to do tshuva with them. And that's the flow. And that's the kavana that we should be having during Hashivenu. I recognize now that I've done wrong. I'm doing tshuva for them. And we'll end off with a pshat avart on the parsha. Parsha's boy. So I'll say two short varts. One of them is that the Mitzrim were our terrible enemies. They were terrible to us, afflicted us, tortured us to some degrees. So you can imagine if we had an opportunity to get back at them, we would jump at that opportunity. If they bend down, we would love to just give them a nice little kick like Mordechai gave to Haman. We would love to do that. However, if you look in Parshas Choshech, what happened over there in Parshas Choshech? It was first few days were just dark, but then the last few days, the Mitzvah couldn't move. They were frozen in their spots. So how were they able to daven? How were they able to eat? During those days that the Mitzrim were frozen, how did they eat? It was at least 3 days, no moving. So how could they drink? How could they eat? How could they survive? So the Netziv, in Perakit Aleph, Pasik Beis, the Netziv says, the Bnei Yisrael came and fed all of the Mitzrim. Imagine that. Here they are, the Mitzrim who had been oppressing them, comes along the Jews with their Red Cross uniforms, and they go ahead and they save the lives, pretty much, of all the Mitzrim. And so Zat Netziv, you see that the Jews weren't celebrating in the demise of the Egyptians. Instead, they weren't taking revenge. They were taking care of them. So it's unbelievable, this idea, what a Jewish person is. We're different. We're just different. We don't need to take revenge. There's no need. Even if it's mutter. So certainly amongst ourselves, like I'm sure everyone here has someone who's done something terrible and awful to them. But most likely, no one has had anyone that's been a Mitzri-like towards them. And even if, yeah, the idea of taking revenge, or here it's not just not taking revenge, it's taking care of them. Can you imagine your worst enemy, would you go ahead and bring them food when they were sick? The answer is you definitely should, because with Jewish people, we don't really care if they were mean or did something not nice to us. So definitely a lesson to learn from the Jewish people in the time. And one last thing, during Machas Choshech, four-fifths of Klal Yisrael were killed during Machas Choshech, right? 80%. So you had a family of 10, Abba will talk later. You have a family of 10, eight people were gone from Klal Yisrael. Unbelievable. So now if we had to think, which would be the first Jews to go? Like, you know, we had to make the list. Okay, which Jews are Hashem going to kill? Most likely, Dustin and Aviram would be on the top of the list, right? Dustin and Aviram are the only Jews that we know really by name, and that were pretty terrible, right? They ratted on Moshe Rabbeinu. They tried to get him killed. They hit each other. And yet, they made it out of Mitzrayim. They made it to the Midbar, right? There was the story with the Mun with them. They weren't necessarily what we think of the upstanding citizens of Klal Yisrael, and yet they made the cut. How could it be? So the Rush asked this question. The Rush asked, how could it be that they made it? He says the biggest sight, which is they had one thing going for them. They were never miyayish from the Gula. They never gave up hope that Shem would save them. And that schus alone was enough, and that outweighed whatever else they did wrong. That put them at the top of the list to be saved. So as we're going through now, times are crazy in the world, political times, and health times, emotional times, everyone has their personal problems. and the tzibur's problems. But as we're going through them, as long as we're not miyayish from the geula, perhaps we'll be zeche, just like this in Aviram, to get out of our, to get the Yeshua, right? We're all dying for certain Yeshuas. Everyone's dying, perhaps, we're all dying for Mashiach, but for sure we're also dying for our own personal Yeshuas. No matter how things are down and out and looking bad for us, but if we're not miyayish from them, we're not miyayish that Hashem will save us, we should mention be zeche to the Yeshua, just like us in Aviram. Have a wonderful Shabbos. So mention that next week, Tu B'Shvat, and the Shlachim, if we have time.
I had a question for you. Yeah. Actually, you can say goodbye and I'll ask you a question after.
Okay. Anyone who wants to leave, goodbye. And then we'll take questions or anything. Bye. Goodbye, Josh. Yeah.
I had broccoli straight out of the oven, pariv. But it was cooked in the oven at the same time that fish with cheese was being cooked open. What's the status?
Both are open. I would treat the broccoli as milchik.
Okay, now I took a cold, clean, fleishig fork that hasn't been used in 24 hours and picked up broccoli with it. What's the status of the food? What's the status of the fork?
Food is fine. And the broccoli and the fork is fine.
Just clean it off and fine?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Have a wonderful Shabbos.
All right. You too. Have a good Shabbos. All right. Josh and Siegel family. Hello, Siegel family.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm glad you were able to join.
No. Okay. As are we. We need to join.
All right, the move is okay. You're settled in.
We're getting there slowly, slowly.
All right, very good. All right, have a great job. We'll be in touch.
All right, bye.
I use all our notes.
Okay, great. Very good.
Thank you.
All right, have a great Shabbos.
See you, good Shabbos.
All right. Hello, mom and dad. Still there? Hello. Goodbye. Hello. Goodbye.